Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide, of course, to better cricket. We're here for a little while to help you out and to help out the players that you coach. Who are we? Well, my name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, and helping me to help you is the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How's it going?
All good, thank you. Bit of rain presently kicking around to the southwest, but I believe it's going to brighten up later because there's a bit of T20 action kicking around at the moment, and I'm looking to catch as much of that as possible.
Yeah, fantastic. Not much happening school-wise, though, is there? It's a bit of a lull now, isn't it? Now you've, in terms of school cricket, now you've finished the school season.
Yeah, it's more watching mode now, and meeting up with players and prospective players, tracking some of the people that are already on the programme as well. So I've watched quite a few of those play the last 10 days or so. So yeah, less throwdowns, more observations in this phase of the year.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. It's quite an interesting area for people, I suppose, you know, especially if you're looking to strengthen a cricket team, you're looking for the right kind of player to bring into your team and all that kind of thing. So when it comes to sort of judging players, maybe that's a bit of a harsh word, but, you know, analysing players, observing players and deciding whether they're going to be the kind of fit for your team, there's quite a few things to look at. I mean, the obvious things is the how they're performing on the field, but there's lots of other things involved in that as well. And especially these days, there's a lot of talk about character and mindset and all those side of things as well. So when you come to sort of looking for players to potentially fill places in sides, whether that's in schools or in representative teams or even at first class level, what kind of things are you looking for?
Well, I think it varies really, depending. I mean, you have to apply it to your own world, really. So in my world, we've got two entry points where we're looking to attract people into the school. One is as they transition from under 13 into under 14 cricket. And the other one is when they transition from under 16 into under 17 cricket. And that's really a school academic educational based thing rather than a cricket one. So I have to adapt my models of what I want according to that. And of course, the other thing is, because the schools, somewhere like Millfield, it's an expensive place to send your kids. It also narrows the field down significantly, even with scholarships, which in our case are, you know, not particularly massive scholarships. There are a lot of schools that offer 100% scholarships. We are not in that ballpark, really. So people have to want to come to us initially, and I think that's a good starting point. You know, many a time I've started conversation with players in my previous roles around county cricket and professional cricket, and then even when it came to international cricket with Ireland, actually. And the crucial thing is that they want to come to you, and that is the first and foremost thing, because if they're interested in what you're doing, then you've got a bit of a hook in there to start off with. And also, they're showing a desire to want to add to the programme as opposed to just come in and take. So that's the first thing I look for. And I suppose that goes into character. And that wouldn't be too dissimilar, I suppose, to club cricket in many ways. I think the person wants to have to come to you as opposed to you having to go to them. I've signed a couple of players purely for money in club cricket in South Africa, and one of them worked and the other one didn't, but both of them initially were me chasing them. And I think it's important that the player is showing a pull and a draw into you as a cricket club or a school or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and a lot of those times, certainly from my point of view, when you're thinking about players, you start with players who want to have the right level of performance, of course. But I think it's almost as important, maybe even slightly more important, to have people who would fit in with the team. Because especially if you're bringing people in, you can sometimes put noses out of joint of other people saying, well, I don't know why we brought him in. We're perfectly good with our current, whatever that is, opening bowler, opening batsman, wicketkeeper, whatever. So it is a tough one to at club level to get right if you bring someone in purely on the numbers and then it turns out that they don't fit in with the ethos of the team or whatever that is. And even if you take the constraints away, which you can't, of course, but even if you sort of ignore the constraints, or you've accepted the constraints and you're working within them, there is that element of the unknown of, is this person going to integrate well with the team? Is this person going to be the type of person that we want around? Or is this person, do we really not care about them being around? All we care about is their runs and wickets, because that second one is not a very long-term solution, is it?
Well, I suppose the answer is historically probably no, if we look at some examples of that from a fairly recent past within cricket. But equally, I think whether you're talking about teams, whether you talk about friendship groups, whether you're talking about a team at work or a group at work that you're working alongside, it's about tolerance as well. And, you know, there isn't going to be a perfect fit straight away, or it's unlikely to happen, because obviously your existing group have got their way of working, their way of communicating, their way of tolerating each other or accepting each other's differences. And so every time you bring somebody in from the outside, it's going to have a slightly unsettling impact upon the existing group. I think that's fairly inevitable, but you know, that can be worked around, and often people are a little bit standoffish when somebody comes into that group initially, but soon they'll start to realise what skills, attributes that person's going to bring into your cricket team and into the ethos overall. And going back to my previous point, if they really want to join you, then that's always a good starting point. And I think that the other people within the group generally see that in the way that the newcomer is behaving and asking questions and whatever the case may be. And that helps to bring them on board as soon as possible, really. So that transition could be made quite quickly. I mean, going back to the school, in terms of our under 13, under 14, we're looking just to get a group of people in, really, at that age group. And it's the scholarships that we offer, however small they may be, will be there to attract people into the school. And then we've got 5 years to develop them as individuals and as groups, so they can enjoy their cricket as best as possible. So I'm not too fussed at the outset of what we get coming in, because I think at that age in particular, people are pretty malleable, and we can work with them, and hopefully the culture will start to rub off on them as well.
I wanted to talk to you, Gareth, about a Pitch Vision product, actually. We do talk about Pitch Vision stuff quite regularly, of course we do. This is the Pitch Vision cricket show, of course. But there's a new product on the market from Pitch Vision called PV Match, which is a tool for bringing scoring into the 21st century, if you like. So certainly from your point of view as a coach, I wanted to get a few ideas of some of the things that scoring means in these days, and how it sort of, that kind of tying scoring and video into your program, your coaching program, is something that can help you quite a lot. Because of course, PV Match allows you not only to score the game on an app for a mobile device or a laptop, but it also allows you to video the game, and you can tie each delivery, every four, you know, every dot, whatever it is, every delivery is tied into a video of that delivery, and that's all done through the PV Match system. So I know you have done similar things like this in the past at various levels. So how important is that idea of being able to tie in sort of actual video and performance to individual players during games as well as during training, which is the idea of PV Match?
Well, I think it's crucial, and certainly, I mean, we've got a match analysis system at school, and obviously through the ECB in particular, I was involved in the first starting off, really, of those systems way back in 2004. We started to work with a company out of New Zealand to do exactly the same thing. And you know, whilst it's fantastic to have video capture opportunity in the nets, the crucial time is when you're competing for real out in the middle, and what that enables you to do is to really see yourself under pressure, see yourself in competitive mode, and then, you know, from that, those imageries that you have up on the screen, from the stats that you have, you can get an incredible amount of information that can then be taken back into the nets to further develop your game. So it would be safe to say that probably the match analysis element of that and having the vision from a match is something that, you know, 10, 15 years ago we could only get from television. But now it's available to everybody, clubs, schools and around the world to be able to access this, which is invaluable when it comes to player development.
And those stats really are good. I mean, I know, you know, we're both men who love a stat and a spreadsheet, but having those, I know that you've been looking this year quite a lot at the averages and strike rates of different shots that players have, which is a fantastic way to go about it, because to get the overall picture of somebody, it's sort of diluting it a bit, isn't it? But if you're getting a picture of specific shots and what happens in specific shots with specific people, it allows you to be a lot more focused and work on those things a lot more specifically, doesn't it? Rather than say, oh, well, he's averaging 45 this year, so he must be a good batsman next.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You know, averaging 45 in most forms of cricket is fantastic. But when you start to break it down, you'll realise in match play that actually there are areas without too much work outside in nets or in drills that you could actually push that average up quite significantly and make the bowler's job and the opposition captain's job much more difficult. And then obviously flipping it back on its other head, you start to see in stats some trends about bowlers. And one of the things that used to come out, and I know we talk about it a lot on this show, but it's the beginning of the over and the end of the over, and really making sure that it's just, yeah, that sort of strategically you've got a plan to how you're going to put that over together. And it was something that I only really got my head around through working with the best bowlers in the world, you know, I'm talking about listening to people like Malcolm Marshall and working alongside somebody like Shane Warne, who first came up with those ideas many moons ago, but now it's more commonplace in our speak as coaches and as players and the club and the school world. But now you've got the opportunity to put some stats behind it, back it up with video, and all of a sudden you can then go away and start to practice differently and adjust your mindset to get a better result at the start and the end of the over. And that's just one example. I mean, there's hundreds of things. I mean, I was at the World Cup final for the women's on Sunday, and it was fascinating because there were 42 back foot drives played off a spin over the course of the game by both sides, which accrued 12 runs. And every time somebody went back to back foot drive, it all, you know, I'd sort of like let out a blooming sigh because the game was going to go nowhere. It was almost like a breather ball, whereas there could be a better option available, which asks more questions of a bowler and more questions of a captain. With video and with stats going alongside that, then you can really break that down and you can just pick out back foot drive versus spin, and you will see all the numbers come up. You will see the video that's associated with it, and then you can show your players and say, well, you know, is there another way? And of course the first thing I do is go, well, of course we can do something else about it. We can pull it. And All of a sudden they've come up with that solution based off of good stats, good imagery, and you don't have to do too much of a coach. And we all know that any idea that comes from a player rather than a coach is more likely to be adhered to and be developed fully.
And you can also see how, you know, in this world where, you know, the idea that one specific technique is correct or incorrect is gone, you can also see if you can tie video to what a player is doing in a game, and you can see something that they're doing that technically, you know, maybe 50, 60 years ago, people would try and hammer out of them. You can say, well, look at the outcomes this, you know, this player's getting by doing this. You know, that seems to be working pretty well. And instead of sort of working on a theoretical level where you say, well, you know, if you do this, then this will happen, and then that's more likely to happen, and then therefore you'll get a low score, or you'll get out, or, you know, bowling, you won't bowl as fast, or whatever it is. You can see that. You can see that live in a game, and you can pick out those things which you think might actually be causing a problem compared to the things which you theoretically think might cause a problem.
Yeah, very much so. And I think initially when we did video analysis way back in the early 2000s, people looked at it as a very negative thing. So I remember my first time of having video analysis, people would go and just look at the ball that they got out. I mean, that was the commonplace. So I set up a set of guidelines, really, for the Somerset team that, yeah, of course, you can go and have a look at the ball that got you out. But before you do that, you need to have pulled out two bits of information that can inform future performance before you then look at the inevitable end result, which is, you know, the delivery that got you out. And we've become far better at pulling out positives from video. You know, if you remember back to the old days of level one and level two, and in particular coaching over here, I remember we used to put a lad out. It was Matt Wood, who now coaches at Nottinghamshire, who I saw last week, who's a great lad. We used to put his video up on the screen, and then every coach in the room would just pick them to bits. Well, I think we've gone beyond that. And we realise that there are some differences in the way that people go about it. There's some fundamentals that are associated with strong performance, but equally we're getting better at seeing the positives in a piece of video, especially out in the middle. I mean, how invaluable is that? And before we then go to the okay negative. But equally, with a bit of software like this, if we do think that there's a trend that's happening in somebody's downfall as a batter, or a trend that's happening in somebody's downfall in being able to put an over together as a bowler, then you can just choose those specifics and see how real that trend is in relation to what you perceive in your head. And if it is the same, then obviously there's some great work that we can go off and do in the nets.
Yeah, that point about looking at how you got out is, you know, that's even true, you know, at club level with guys who aren't necessarily, but getting instant access to their videos. And I'm sure when PV Match becomes a lot more popular around the world, that's the one thing that people want to know about first. But that is only one piece of information. It's a highly influential piece of information on your game, but it is only one piece of information. If you bat for a 100 balls, well, even if you have a not great innings and you bat for 10, 15, 20 balls, it's still only one ball out of all those balls where you get out to. I always say to people who talk about how they got out at the weekend, I say to them, okay, but how did you bat up to the point that you got out? And if you can focus on the whole innings and not just the way that the innings ended, that will give you a lot more information than just saying, oh, well, you know, I played a stupid shot there and now I really regret it and now I need to change my technique. That's not the most useful way to go about things. But saying to yourself, how did I bat? I actually batting pretty well up until that point. So, you know, I'm quite happy overall. Gives you something a bit more to hang on to for your confidence and also perhaps some things to work on in the training ground.
I think the other thing that particularly the live streaming element has of watching yourself play out in the middle is that you don't just always focus on you being in your stance facing the ball or you being at the end of your run-up facing the ball. As a batter in particular, it's what you're doing in between balls which is really important as well. And we don't get that in nets, do we? Unless we really specifically set up a net to build in the time lapses in between each ball.
And it's never the same.
And it's never the same, is it? So you get to see that. And often, batters are undone, not by the ball that's being bowled at them, but the fact that they aren't actually in that moment at that time and they're still dwelling or they're future projecting or whatever. And often, their physical behaviours will give the game away a little bit. So that is the real strength of watching yourself play on, you know, in real time, as out in the middle, under competition, and seeing how that you manage yourself. And, you know, the best players in the world, you know, I just think of Alistair Cook and the way that he's probably, in my time of coaching, the best manager of the in-between-each-ball that I've worked alongside. And I have to say that I don't think anybody's given him that bit of information or shown him what to do. I think that's just something that he's done. But equally, if you've got access to seeing yourself on a screen in between each ball, you can go, actually, that's a little bit different to what Alistair Cook does, and as a result, I'm not ready for the next ball. And that sort of thing is massive, you know, not just comparing the shots and trying to compare yourself against the world's greatest, but also the pre-delivery stuff, the in-between each ball, which you don't get unless you've got a system such as this, which gives you that capacity.
Yeah, precisely. So if you are listening to this and thinking, oh, Pitch Vision Match sounds all right to me, you know, it sounds like it's something I could work with at the level that I'm working at, you know, whether you're a coach or an administrator or player, still a player, you know, there's something in there. That live streaming thing as well, that's really, you know, everybody loves that, you know, because you've got, especially at club cricket, you've got people all over the world probably who have been involved in the club at one stage or another, and they want to know what's going on a Saturday afternoon. So if you can spread the club around the world to all the expats, then it's a fantastic tool for promoting the club as well. So it's not just for coaches and players, it's a great thing for the whole club that can be used, you know, all through the week, and especially on a Saturday afternoon when you're romping to victory, hopefully.
Well, we've had some incredible numbers on our viewing feeds, you know, and again, when you break those down, you're absolutely right. You know, we live in a world now where people get on a plane and move to foreign climes, don't they, and work over there, and what better thing to do is to have that have the streaming thing going on in the corner of your computer when you're meant to be working over in somewhere else in the world. It's fantastic. But that's certainly what we've seen from a number of our parents and ex-pupils at the school, that the numbers have been startling of people that have wanted to tune in and watch some of the 2020 games that we've streamed online.
Let's answer a question from a listener now. This we normally have two, but we want to talk about PV Match because we're excited about that. So thanks for listening to that. Hopefully you got some useful information out of that. Maybe even you were tempted by PV Match. But let's go back to the original format of the show, which is to answer a question. And I did get a very, very long question this week, so it's definitely worth a proper chat. On this one, Gareth, it's our friend, our new friend, Pradeep. And Pradeep has written in with a question saying, I'm originally from Nepal and I'm currently living in France. And for the last couple of years, I've met with many English language and sports teachers to see if a cricket program could be conceivable in schools. And finally, last week, I got a positive answer. The local school would like me to come and run a few cricketing sessions with their students. But my challenge is I've never coached someone who's never played, seen or heard of cricket. In the past, I've coached a few players to refine their skills and techniques, but that's it. I'll have four classes with 24 kids in each class, and the kids are 11 to 12 years old. The teachers want me to spend a couple of hours with each class to initiate and run a short cricket match in a gymnasium. Can you help me with some guides to run these sessions properly, so that the kids can find it exciting and ask their teachers for more cricket? If I go back to how to bowl a ball correctly or how to hold a bat or different kinds of shots, it can get quite boring. So what can I do? What kind of match can I run for an hour that can be fast and also involve a lot of players? I would really appreciate your help. Big challenge for Pradeep. What do you think, Gareth?
Well, firstly, I think it's fantastic that he's convince people who wouldn't be used to cricket to give it a go, and he must have sold a fairly good image of the game to be able to do that. So first thing I would say is, you know, that image that you created has obviously brought these people in and have got them to be excited and enthusiastic about it. So I would build something off the back of that. So depending on what you've presented to them or how you've spoken about it, I would gear your sessions off of that as best as possible. Now, I should imagine that it's the key things that you want to get out is the athleticism and movement, the ability to strike a ball hard and far, and also to be able to propel a ball fast and make it do funny things. So the bowling side of things is generally the thing that, say, my dad, who's worked with kids starting off, has gone to first. But I think in this context, bearing in mind that you're going to be on your own, I would say focus mostly on the striking and the fielding element of the game. Now, it's unlikely that these kids haven't had some exposure to striking sports in the past, you know, whether it be tennis or hockey or whatever the case may be. You know, they would have definitely been exposed to some catching and some invasion sports in the past, you know, through rugby and football, which is obviously two very strong sports in France. So I would really go along the striking, and I would go along the fielding bit initially before you start to introduce the bowling. So I would steer away from having a proper game of cricket if you can, and think about some games which involve hitting the ball hard, not particularly with any technique,
but encouraging people to hit the ball strongly and also to learn to stop the ball. And then you can stop that game every now and again and introduce a drill to bring in things like a long barrier, or to teach people how to be ready to stop the ball at point of contact, or teach somebody how to catch properly. So I would play a big game, maybe a stationary ball hitting off the top of a stump or a cone to start off with. Lots of activity, a batting side, they get one hit and then rotate around, building in the stopping, building in the catching and building in the throwing elements, because you'll be going on games that they would have played previously. Something like stall ball, for example, is played quite significantly over in France. So the more you can draw upon their previous experience, the better initially, and then you can start to build in the nuances of a game.
Yeah, we've had great... I don't know how much room he'll have to do this, but we've had great success with them, with all levels of players, of junior players, with the Diamond Cricket game, Gareth, which I'm sure you're familiar with, you know, having four sets of stumps and making it a little bit more rounders-like, I suppose, or baseball-like, and not needing to worry about teaching someone how to bowl. But still having lots of people striking the ball a lot, because, you know, you've got four batters at any one time, and always crazy things happen during that game, and it's always good fun, even if there's not a huge amount of, you know, keeping your elbow up and bowling with a straight arm going on. But that's not the goal, as you said, Gareth. The goal is to get people loving the basic concept of the game, which is running, throwing, stopping, catching, hitting, and doing those very sort of simple skills in a cricketing context, and building up a kind of love for doing it. And I can tell you now that almost every single time I walk out to a junior training session, whether there's three kids there or 30 kids there, always the first question is, are we going to do diamond cricket today? So it obviously has some kind of pull on the younger players for some reason. I don't exactly know what it is, other than it's just great fun. But maybe that's all it is. I don't know about you, Gareth. What kind of impact has diamond cricket had on you with those kind of guys?
Yeah, definitely. I think diamond cricket is magnificent because, as you say, it keeps lots of batters involved. Another great game which does a very similar thing would be pavilion cricket. And pavilion cricket is a game where you have a batting side and a bowling side. The coach is the bowler or underarm feeder. Every time you hit the ball, it's got to go, in the games that I've played, it's got to go in front of the square, because you want people to have the intention to hit with a relatively straight bat. So without teaching them that, I make sure that they hit the ball in front of the square as much as possible. Then they run 22 yards and the fielding side have to get the ball back to the coach. And if they get the ball back to the coach before the person has run the 22 yards, then they're out. They can obviously be caught and they can obviously be bowled as well. And there's an in pavilion and an out pavilion. And if you do happen to get out, you go and sit in the out pavilion. But you also create a boundary. And again, I put my boundary fairly straight. Again, no teaching of the shots, but just there's a straight boundary. And if a ball is struck into that boundary, and everybody from the out pavilion goes back into the in pavilion, and it gets really fantastic, especially when you've got one or two batters who are batting at the end, because they're obviously running constantly, which is getting them tired, which brings in error. But equally, if they get hold of one and they knock the ball into the boundary area, then they get all of their teammates back into the game again, which creates a heck of a lot of excitement. It's a fantastic fielding game. It's a fantastic batting game. It's very similar to diamond cricket. Yeah. It's all inclusive. But, those two have been the staple diet, really, for me when I've coached on some of the holidays that we go to with the young ones in particular, and it always goes down well.
Yeah, exactly. And as you say, Gareth, it's you can still get in things that will help people with the game that they're playing, and they're also cricketing skills. So if you're getting that pull of, oh, I should be teaching them how to do things properly here, which everybody gets that, don't they? You know, you don't want to just be the bloke chucking the tennis ball. You actually want to be helping someone in some way as well. So to be able to sort of sneak in a catching technique here, or holding the bat slightly differently there, or a long barrier somewhere else, if you can get them in and they can see that working, and it improves their experience within that game, then they're learning those cricket skills as well as learning, as well as having fun. And that's sort of the sweet spot all round, because it makes you happy and it keeps them happy. So, but always keep the game going. You know, I've seen in the past, I'm sure you've seen it as well, Gareth, great long lectures from coaches about all kinds of things. And that's one of the worst things you can do if you're trying to enthuse kids, is sit them all down and give them a nice long lecture about all the things that they're doing wrong.
Definitely. And I think a game like that with two coaching points over the course of its duration is a fantastic coaching session in itself, particularly with people that have started up the game for the first time or maybe having one of their first few sessions. If people can go away with two coaching points and have fun and be active, then you've pretty much hit a winner as a coach.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. Now, as you know, if you're a regular listener, this point in the show is where we normally decide on the winner of the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. But of course, we only had one question this week. So I think, Gareth, if you're in agreement, we can automatically give the online coaching course to Pradeep, and perhaps he can pick something that will help him with his coaching.
That's exactly what I was thinking. You know, is there a course on there that you think best demonstrates some of the skills that you're going to require to play some of these games that we've talked about, Pradeep? And if so, then use it wisely and good luck. Make sure you keep us up to date. I mean, it's a fantastic thing. France is very close to my heart. I love going to France. And in fact, there's some brilliant cricket coaches in France that I've worked with, David Bordes being my favourite French cricket coach. So maybe, Pradeep, if you have the opportunity to have a look on Facebook for David Bordes, then he might give you a little heads up under some of the things that's worked for him over there as well.
There's not many people, Gareth, in the world who could come up with a list of French coaches and then pick their favourite one. That's quite the badgering there. Well done. Now, for anybody else who's listening to the show and were thinking they want to send in a question to us and maybe alongside getting answered, maybe win that prize like Pradeep did, how could they get in touch with us to do that?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. You can also get us through social media. There is messaging system, of course, on pitchvision.com, which you can head over to find out about. Just search for Pitch Vision Academy and you can message us there if you've got an account with us, and it's free to get one. And if you want to use any other social media, there is Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter @pitchvisionacad. You can subscribe to the show to listen every week. If you want to do that, you search for Pitch Vision Academy in your favorite podcast app, and that should come up. Tap on subscribe, and you're away to go there. And if you want to get all the old shows, all the old show notes, or just keep up to date with all the articles and things, you can do all that over at pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, where also we hope Labels will be back from his 1 week holiday. Until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.